if you're making at least enough sense for a short period of time to a 4-year-old, yeah, then you might have a decent self. You might have.
Hello there. This is Amanda. You're listening to Cover Story, episode 28. Cover Story is a podcast about music, in particular, cover songs. We are podcasting tonight from a tiny beach town in New Jersey. It's a rainy, cold April Friday night, but we've got some warm vibes inside and hope to pass them on to you. As always, I'm joined in our porch studio by my co-host and producer, Filler, aka The Bone.
We're talking about Rockstar Blood.
Rockstar Blood. So yeah. I totally pulled a switcheroo on you guys because in the beginning of the week, I was all set to do REM and I was doing my research and how I landed on REM. Well, I'll save it for the REM episode, but I came across this article and I can't believe we've been doing this now for over a year and a half that we're still finding new songs that are cover songs that I had no idea. Yeah. And that's why when I saw that Girls Just Want to Have Fun was a cover song, I was like, what the hell? How come that hasn't come up on my radar all this time? Cyndi Lauper and the Secret Feminist History of Girls Just Want to Have Fun. It was 1983 and women were starting to get loud. In the academy, writers and theorists were debating prostitution, pornography, and BDSM. The Equal Rights Amendment was making its last round through Congress, passing in the House, but not getting enough votes to be added to the Constitution. Alice Walker had just published The Color Purple. Across the Atlantic, Margaret Thatcher was continuing her reign as the first female Prime Minister of Britain. It's easy to make the time Cyndi Lauper struck out on her own sound dramatic. There was her hardscrabble childhood in Queens, her absent father, and the stepfather paid her much unwanted attention. But Lauper already wrote the perfect sentence about her decision to leave home herself. It's the first sentence of the first chapter of her 2012 memoir. "I left home at 17," she wrote. "I took a paper bag with a toothbrush, a change of underwear, an apple, and a copy of Yoko Ono's book, Grapefruit." That was 50 million records, 2 Grammys, and 44 years ago. Teen homelessness is an issue that has stuck with Lauper. These days, she's focusing on advocating for gay and transgender kids thrown out by their parents. Lauper's efforts to do something besides just being a famous person and singing go back more than a decade. She's written a song about Matthew Shepard, the gay University of Wyoming student whose killing inspired the Laramie Project, organized a campaign against the bullying of gay people at school and workplaces, pushed for the passage of the Hate Crimes Prevention Act, and built a homeless shelter for LGBT youth in New York City. But this is more than garden variety celebrity activism. Lauper's work is born of personal experience and memories of when the bathroom became a dangerous place in her childhood home. "My sister and I live most of our lives dodging pedophiles," she wrote. More than a decade later, Lauper, about to record her first solo record, She's So Unusual, was faced with an unusual prospect. Should she record a song by another artist called Girls Just Want to Have Fun? The original version of the song, written by Robert Hazard, had a decidedly different point of view. It was sung from a man's perspective, with "fun" standing for coerced bedroom shenanigans. Lauper reworked the track to fit her views on women and sexuality, including the lines that are often celebrated as a subtle feminist throwdown. "Some boys take a beautiful girl and hide her away from the rest of the world. I want to be the one to walk in the sun. Oh, girls, they want to have fun." "It doesn't mean that girls just want to fuck," Lauper explained. "It just means that girls want to have the same damn experience that any man could have." "So when you ask me if I knew that Girls Just Want to Have Fun would be a hit," she wrote, "and I say I didn't want to do the song at first because I didn't think it was especially good for women, maybe you understand better why." Her manager, however, said that sung by a woman, the song would take on a whole new meaning. And Lauper came around. "I said to myself, hell yeah, I'll make an anthem," she wrote. "Maybe it'll be something that will bring us all together and wake us up. It would be a movement right under all the oppressors' noses, and no one would know about it until there was nothing they could do to stop it." This plan was accomplished with a few lyrical tweaks. Perhaps most important were the lines that made the song about more than just about having sex. The song became a juggernaut. It was nominated for a Grammy. Lauper became the first woman to have four consecutive top five Billboard singles. The unforgettable video, featuring the orange-haired Lauper prancing about New York and co-starring the World Wrestling Federation's Captain Lou Albano as Lauper's father, won an MTV Video Music Award. Mission accomplished. Girls was engineered to be an anthem of women's sexual freedom at a time when feminism was becoming a big part of cultural consciousness, and it helped set a template for how future stars would sing about social issues, according to The Atlantic. "For a minute, I made it popular to be the odd guy out," Lauper said. "All of a sudden, the straight guy was the odd guy out, just for a minute. And that, to me, was justice."
Yeah, you know, it's kind of wild, right? Because you're a kid, and as a kid, you see this on MTV, and you just assume it's always existed.
Right.
You don't realize till many, many years later, many years into your adulthood. So this came out in 83.
Yeah.
And it was probably pretty popular for a couple of years. I don't know. It was probably in rotation.
It was in rotation. And you have to remember, too, 1983, this is when, as a kid, you know, and I was in third grade, I was probably a little bit young for the demographic they were targeting. But this is when MTV was literally announcing themselves. I remember there were commercials. And I was like watching TV like all the time as a kid. There were commercials for like MTV's coming, you know, and it was this like man on the moon thing,
right,
and
sure,
this whole thing. And it was like the launch of MTV. Gentlemen. And they right. even had like a theme song. Like, you know, and then
it was very
the videos.
Like Devo sounding.
Yes. Yeah. And it was like, you know, the neon whatever. And this video, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, was one of the ones that was just always in kind of like the Uber rotation.
Right. I think the brilliance about the song and the video is that, like, you could be literally 4 years old, or you could be 14 years old, or you could be, like, yeah. 28 years old, or you could yeah. be, like, in your 30s or 40s, whatever. And, I mean, it may have had a profound message, but, like, if you didn't get that message, it yeah. also made sense to you on a very simplistic level, or like a very, you know.
Yeah, trust me. As yeah. a little kid, I was not. Yeah. I was
it's
just in like,
all
yeah,
you're hearing is girls just want to have fun.
She's so right. I'm just going to go outside but and ride my bike. I
remember,
I just
like,
have fun.
I remember being a little kid and listening to the radio in the car. And as a little kid, when you don't know the meaning of something and you mm-hmm. only know how to take things literally, most lyrics seem really weird.
Totally.
But if a song has like one line that yeah. is just basic and literal
yeah.
that you can latch onto as a kid. That's why I almost think like a songwriter, you know, a good like a person to bounce a song off of if you're writing a song would be like a 4 year old child.
Oh yeah. That's a good, it's a
to
good
to see
song.
If like, if you're making at least enough sense for a short period of time to a 4 year old, then you might have a decent song.
You might have. Well, otherwise, you happen to have one that lives in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Oh, you're right. You can't just rent them.
Yeah, yeah. No. You got one. You can rent mine if you want. Well, I think I told you guys this last week about how William was, when he was listening to the Uptown Girl by Billy Joel, he was like, what are pearls? Like, he, you know, he picked up on like that one
that's pretty
random,
cool.
you know, word in the song. And
I mean, I remember being a kid and listening to like Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah.
And I just literally pictured like somebody like getting down on their hands and knees
dust.
And like eating dust, like biting dust. And it was also like a kind of a dark sounding song. So it was yeah. also totally creepy yeah. for like a 3 year old.
So, it's funny because before I came over here, we had dinner with my dad, and he took me, and I mentioned this, I think, in a very early episode, that my first concert ever was the Cyndi Lauper Shebop tour, and it was in like 1984, you know, but that was my first concert, was the PNC Arts Center.
Uh-huh.
I think it was called the,
wow.
What was it called back then?
The Garden State,
the Garden State Art Center
before right. it had a sponsor, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, Garden State Art Center. But it was also the same year. Now, for whatever reason, my dad really liked, he would get into the same, because he was always into music, and he went along with my music, and Boy George Culture Club. So this was the same time, you had Culture Club and you had Cyndi Lauper. And he would always, you know, with Boy George, he would call him Girl George because, you know, he would whatever. He'd be like, oh, yeah, this is Girl George. I'm like, no, it's Boy George. And he's like, yeah, but he looks like a girl. I'm like, well, his name is Boy George. But so it's just a very interesting, like, their whole cultural persona. And before, obviously, what you guys can't see to our listeners, we were watching a David Letterman interview from 1983 with Cyndi Lauper, and she definitely had a character. Like, she was playing sort of like this role.
She's playing up her character, because definitely.
You know, you meet a lot of rock and rollers, right?
Sure.
And we're all very polite. And plus, we have to know how to eat well, because that's etiquette. Because when you're in this field, you do a lot of business over lunch or dinner. See? So if you eat wrong, or say, you know how they have the butter dishes and it's always to the right, and you never know, you know, I don't know, sometimes it could come over you, you don't realize which is your dish, you know? And if you take the wrong dish, then you're in trouble.
There you
because
go.
To be the president's
That's
dish.
Right.
See, so etiquette plays a big part. Of course, grooming is everything.
Grooming is everything.
I think, like, some of it was just her. And I think who you see being interviewed, like, now in present day, I think that's her.
Yeah, that's her.
But definitely, as, like, a young woman that finally is, like, burst onto the scene.
Yeah, and you could tell she was nervous in that,
she's playing
that interview.
A character.
And,
yeah.
You know.
She's playing her Queen's girl role.
Yes.
Which is funny. We were just watching that Marvelous Miss Maisel show, and you got the famous comic in that Lenny Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Queens girl playing a role, but she actually wasn't that anyway. So maybe these Queens girls, just when they got success, felt the need to play a role. I don't
know. Lot of people from Queens have,
but she did seem in that interview like she was playing up the mousy voice. She has a mousy voice, but she did seem like she came out there with like a plan to sort of be a bit absurd.
Yeah. She was acting a little bit.
But it's showbiz.
Yeah.
And it worked. It worked nicely. It was fun to watch. And it was also cool because we're sitting here talking, you know, this many years later about like not being exactly sure if she was playing a role or not. Like, she played it so well, it was like, wait, is she playing a role? Is she not? Like, it left me with like a little discomfort trying to figure it out while I was watching it. So imagine being in the audience at the time. So
I had no idea. You know, I read two articles, one that I quoted The Atlantic, and then the other was, believe it or not, The Washington Post, which you don't think of The Washington Post writing about Cyndi Lauper, but they were doing a piece about her feminism and all of the her advocacy, gay rights, and relating it to Kinky Boots, which it's a show about, and I haven't seen that on Broadway, but you know, I think if we back then in 1983, you know, could have picked any of the star, like the rock stars that came out of that time, I definitely wouldn't have predicted that Cyndi Lauper would have gone on to be such a strong voice for so many people, and to win a Tony Award for the Broadway show and stuff like that. Like, it seems like she did it in a very subtle sort of way. Like, she obviously broke onto the scene in 83 and the, you know, nonstop rotation with the videos. But then you were talking, Jenny, about True Colors, that song. I think that came out like 3 or 4 years after. Beautiful song.
Yeah.
She did the soundtrack for Goonies, you know, like a song for Goonies, which kind of brought her back to a younger group of people. But then for a while, she really was sort of
not on the pop star radar.
Not on the pop star radar, but she was doing all of this advocacy.
Things,
exactly, yeah. And just quietly doing it, not for recognition, not for... so that's that... I don't know. I really enjoyed learning about her story. I didn't know much about her other than what we knew as kids growing up. And I don't know. I think she's great.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's great too.
We didn't even talk about, wait, hold on, don't stop.
Oh no.
We didn't talk about the guy that originally did the song. There's nothing really to comment on. The guy's name is Robert Hazard. And it was from 1977, and I mentioned that, you know, he had a different perspective about it being, instead of a liberating feminist song, he was talking more about, girl, you know, I just want to have fun with girls kind of thing. I know your love for him, as deep as day is long. I know you'll never be
That was his interpretation. All right. But he really was just kind of like a folk kind of guy. And this obviously was like his meal ticket because he got so many royalties from this because he is credited as the writer and whatever. Sure. But it just really shocked me that this was a cover song because I had no idea until a couple days ago.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. This particular song, it almost doesn't matter who wrote it because it's hers.
It's hers. Yeah. And, you know, like when we first started doing this, like I would Google like best cover songs of all time and you have your regulars like right all along the Watchtower and, you know, right. Joe Cocker's version of what the hell is that Beatles song that he does? You know what it is.
I Get High with a Little
Help. Yeah, with a little help from my friend. Yeah. But so there's a lot of, oh, and Hallelujah, you know.
Right.
But this one obviously doesn't even come in the radar, maybe because it's not a great song.
Whatever. Well, maybe.
It was with R.E.M. and the song Superman. I never knew that was a cover, but it was, I think I did, I just did a Google search of songs you don't know are cover songs or something like that.
Right.
And I landed on this article by a real like talented kind of writer, music fan. And it was cover songs that you don't really, when you think of cover songs, they're not the mainstream ones like R.E.M. Superman. I had no idea that was a cover song. I love that song. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
Right on.
Anyway, all that's right that. On.
Harry Nilsson was an American singer-songwriter who achieved the peak of his commercial success in the early 1970s. A tenor with a 3.5-octave range, Nilsson was best known for his most commercially successful albums, Nilsson Schmilsson, 1971, and Son of Schmilsson, 1972, which produced the international top 10 singles Without You and Coconut. His other top 10 hit, Everybody's Talkin', in 1968, was a prominent song in the 1969 film Midnight Cowboy. Most recently, his song Gotta Get Up has had a resurgence in Netflix's comedy drama series Russian Doll, where it is played a million times. I probably first heard Without You as a little kid in the car listening to Top 40 Radio, Z100. Mariah Carey did a cover that was infinitely in rotation, and you couldn't get away from it. I wouldn't become aware that it was a cover until I started consciously exploring Harry Nilsson's songbook when I was in my 20s. I likely started delving into Nilsson because of Midnight Cowboy, the 1969 American buddy drama film starring John Voight and Dustin Hoffman. The film won 3 Academy Awards, Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Adapted Screenplay. Midnight Cowboy is the only X-rated film ever to win Best Picture, though such a classification no longer exists, and it was the first LGBT Best Picture winner. It has since been placed 36th on the American Film Institute's list of the 100 greatest American films of all time. In 1994, Midnight Cowboy was deemed culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress and selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry. Needless to say, it's a brilliant film, made even more brilliant by Nilsson's rendition of Everybody's Talkin', which is the film's main theme. And I say rendition because Nilsson actually didn't write the song, although he won a Grammy for Best Male Vocal Performance that year. The song was penned by none other than Fred Neil, one of my favorite American folk singer-songwriters of the 1960s and the early 1970s. Fred Neil is highly regarded by contemporary folk singers. However, he left the music business in the 1970s and has spent much of the last 30 years of his life devoting himself to the preservation of dolphins. Anyhow, when I first heard Harry Nilsson's original version of Without You, it blew my mind. I couldn't stop listening to it. The power in the vocal was totally stunning, and I'm a real sucker for a good ballad. This was probably around the time I was deep into How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees. You know, people could really write music in the 70s. Sophisticated chord changes, unexpected and super melodic key modulations, interesting harmonies, string arrangements, incredible production, the works. And a real good 70s ballad is where it's at. Like a real good wine pairing, delicate and sophisticated. Okay, I realize that there's something wrong with me, and I experience the sensations of nature in my own particular way. But Without You is gut-wrenching, and if you want to feel some intensity,
Blast that sucker on your headphones. Be alone with it. Turn it up. It's a hell of an experience. Then go ahead and listen to Fred Neil's original version of Everybody's Talking. Man, he brings a real lone wolf lonerism to it, but with a real artful sensitivity. You got the vibe that Neil was a real artist, a guy on the fringes of country and folk who wasn't going to be satisfied to follow a traditional path. Well, Harry Nilsson wasn't going to be satisfied to do so either, and he just kind of drank his way down a hole. Sometimes it seems that all this passion needs to be medicated. Too bad there isn't enough channeling of it towards something else, but that's the way it goes. And that's a very sad thing. So let's get into it. Let's talk about hitting the city streets with the volume set to 11, rocking out on some 70s balladry. Let's talk about the best decade of American music and film. Let's talk about introversion. Everybody's talking, and I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes in my mind. No, I won't let you leave my love behind. I won't let you leave my love behind.
So
we're ripping band-aids off a major shitty.
So look, I didn't cuts. Make it, I guess I didn't make it clear that stinky finger, what do they call, bad finger?
Bad finger.
Hold on, hold on. Anyhow, yeah, they wrote it. But you know, it's the first time I ever felt anything for the song is when I heard Harry Nilsson sing it.
Yeah.
You know, so there you go.
There you go.
That covers that.
That covers that.
Yeah, Harry Nilsson had an interesting life. I mean, Harry Nilsson like really like came from like total poverty, like in Brooklyn, and he ran a, like his father died in the war when he was like 4 years old. You know, he was raised by his mother. They had no money. She took, you know, every job under the sun and like just to sort of make ends meet. He had like a real hard-nosed upbringing, right? Mm. And then when he was 15, when he was younger than that, he started living like with his aunt and uncle who were like in a little bit of a better position and his cousin. And then when he was 15, he took off from there and like found his way across the country by himself, like wow. By railroad, hitchhiking, whatever, and landed in LA. And he...
always wanting to, it was singing like a pursuit of his at that age? Or?
Like, not like yes and no. Like, he got out there, he made some friends and started playing music with them. But like, he started working, well, yes, music was in the fold. And he started working at like, you know, Capitol Theater, Paramount Theater, mm-hmm. Paramount Theater or something. He worked there for like 3 years as like a bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. He learned how to keep their books. So he learned about banking. Mm-hmm. Then he worked at a bank for like, he like in a suit, like he worked at a bank and was good at his job. And when he was home from work, he would like write music and play music with his like writing partner or whatever, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. One thing leads to another. He walks into one of these offices and plays some songs for like this music publisher. And the guy's like, you know, trying to contain himself because he knows, like, holy hell, like, yeah. this is a special dude.
Yeah.
You know, he starts paying him $50 a week to write songs for the publishing company. And then eventually one of these songs finds its way to the Monkees.
Wow.
The Monkees record one of his songs for his record. The music publisher looks at Harry Nilsson, says, you can quit your bank job, and that was that.
Wow.
So he was really like a songwriter first.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah, he's songwriter first, and he gets his breakthrough that starts making him enough money to quit his day job through, I mean, as far as my research is concerned, through a song that the Monkees recorded.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, but when it comes down to it, the guy's got like a voice in the world of like something like Paul McCartney meets Roy Orbison.
Yes.
He's got like the power of Roy Orbison and like the sort of beautiful sort of delicacy of Paul McCartney's voice.
Yeah, that is a great call.
He and he's just also like a really interesting lyricist, and John Lennon has said that Harry Nilsson influenced him. And you could tell that the Beatles influenced Harry Nilsson. But that's very interesting to me. You know, you never really hear about who influenced the Beatles.
I know.
You know?
You're right.
You just don't.
You're right.
But they were contemporaries, and the Beatles loved Harry Nilsson. Mm-hmm.
The only one I hear when about influencing the Beatles is that Ravi Shankar, right? Is that the guy's name?
Well, you know, like mid-career, mid-career when they
Bob Dylan.
Mid-career when they got into, you know, meditation and went to India. And started bringing like Middle Eastern music or Eastern music into their world. But like just at the most fundamental level.
Yeah. Wait, can you talk about the guy who originally sang Everybody's Talking, Fred?
Fred Neil.
Yeah.
Did we not cover him in an early?
No.
We may have intended to, and we didn't.
Yeah, I think this was always the Harry Nilsson episode.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of info on Fred Neil, but Fred Neil is like sort of like this. When it was like sort of in vogue to be this like lone wolf sort of baritone singing, you know, kind of creepy male, like Waylon Jennings, but you know, Fred Neil was more out and sort of artful than Waylon Jennings, but you could tell that like, they were trying to brand him sort of that way. That's the world they're putting him in.
Was he a country singer?
Yeah.
Oh,
he was country and folk.
Okay.
He was like, he like straddled that country folk thing. He wasn't country enough and he wasn't folk enough, you know, like, and so like Fred Neil had like a small handful of like well-known songs and like a short career because his heart really wasn't in the whole industry side of things. But Fred Neil in the 60s wrote songs for other people and had a couple breakthroughs. And also had an absolutely amazing voice of his own. In my reading, I was talking about that he left the music industry to work with the preservation of dolphins.
This old world may never change the way it's been. And all the ways of war can't change it back again. I've been searching for the dolphins in the sea. And sometimes I
and that was not amazing. That was actually like not a like some random like, you know, the guy just left it to do he had a different calling.
Right.
He had a different calling.
Yeah.
So,
well, good for him, for the Dolphins.
You know, I mean, it's not, I guess it's pretty easy to become disillusioned by that industry.
Oh yeah, totally.
And so if you feel you can do something more impactful, then deal with that then. And that's the vibe I got from Fred Neil. You know, like a couple weeks ago we did Talk, another guy who just sort of disappeared from the industry.
Yeah, right.
Recently passed away. Like, there's just brilliant people that leave their mark, like, over the course of, like, an 8 to 10 year period and disappear.
Yeah, and that's it.
And that's very interesting.
Yeah, just being difficult. And Midnight Rider, well, you mentioned Midnight Rider in your reading, and I want to talk about that because didn't you?
Oh, perhaps.
I hope you did.
Midnight
Jesus
Cowboy.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Midnight Ride.
I'm like, what is Midnight Ride?
Isn't that an Allman Brothers song? What is that, like a strip
Allman
club
Brothers
on 35?
Yeah, you never been to the Midnight Ride?
A strip club on Asbury Circle?
Cowboy. Oh my God. So I've never actually seen Midnight Cowboy. And now, yes, and now I can
God.
See. Now I can see why not. Because when I read the, like, the plot, it's very, it's
one of the best. It's one of the best American films of all.
No, I know. Yeah. I mean, just like the plot is like, you know, it's a lot going on.
You know,
and it was rated X.
Which is wild, and I didn't know that that's not even a designation anymore. But at the time, because of the sexual acts that happened between men, once in like a, movie theater. I mean, it's great. In the 70s, there are definitely like peepees on screen, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why they stopped doing that.
Yeah, but, I think they're coming back.
What do you want me to say?
The peepees.
I'm going to say peepees. We have children here.
Peni?
No. Pinoys. I don't know, man. But look. I mean, you remember the David Bowie movie, The Man Who Fell to Earth? Very strange film. Incredible film. But like you see like David Bowie's like full frontal naked in this movie like several times.
David Bowie.
And it's just no big deal.
His movies were all wacky.
Labyrinth.
So
yeah, like how young is Jennifer Connelly?
Jennifer Connelly.
She must be 19 years old in that movie.
Labyrinth. Oh my God.
She takes a or somebody takes her baby. David Bowie takes her baby.
Oh my God.
That movie's amazing. But it's like that was a movie that you're like, yes, we'll bring our children to see this movie, and then it's got David Bowie. It's like, who's making these decisions?
Yeah, these movies. So John Voight, like, this was like a major.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
John Voight and Dustin Hoffman. You know, John Voight is like.
So this film came out
John
in 69.
Voight is like a fresh, he's a cowboy. He's from
Texas.
He's a straight up cowboy.
Wow.
And he ends up in New York and it's not working out for him. And he doesn't have the chops to be in New York. And, you know, shit gets dark. He makes friends with Dustin Hoffman, who's a sketchy, like, sort of like, he's a rat. He's, like, literally, like the rats that crawl through New York City.
Yeah.
He's clever. He's smart, but he's dumb. But he's
cunning and calculated.
But he's uneducated, but he's street smart.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, I think he's, like, literally playing a rat in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, no, he's a beautiful character.
Yeah.
I guess rats can be beautiful. But anyhow, and then, you know, it's just like, it's one of these films, like, these films only happen in the 70s. Like a film like Deer Hunter.
Yeah,
or like,
Deer Hunter. Oh, my God.
You know,
gosh.
These films are like, these films just explore, like, the underbelly of, like, humanity.
Deer Hunter is intense.
And,
what about Deliverance? Dude, that's like another one.
I feel like everything that's happening then is, like, the most amazing convergence of. Of like, the fact that like the Vietnam War has become what it's become, and then it ends or whatever, and like all of these brilliantly skilled people in film and music have like not only amazing technology at their fingertips, but they're masters at using it for like the first time. So there's convergence of skill. And technology. And then there's just like the guys who are running the show, who are controlling the money, are all these old guys. And they're so out of touch with what's good that or what, you know, is going to sell that they're just throwing money out there.
Yeah.
And nobody's trying to pretend to be smart. They're just the finance guys. And they're just like, take the money. We don't know. You know, we're just going to trust you.
But these movies and were so like, long, too.
They were long and they were artful as fuck, and like, I mean, it's just like a treasure trove of brilliance in the 70s with music and film.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
God
it's crazy.
Damn it. That's a time that's just not going to happen again. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the reality of everything. There's always things that are just never going to happen again that were totally brilliant. However, even though films like that don't get made anymore, we are seeing like these new formats that are being explored and experimented with. There's still so much talent and so much brilliance. So we shall not despair.
No, we shall not. We shall not.
Okay, how deep as your love.
How deep is your love? All right, you guys. We want to thank you. We want to thank you for listening to episode 28. We hope you enjoyed it. We certainly learned a couple things or two in our research and beyond in our banter. But we have some exciting things happening in episode 29, which we want to keep you abreast of. And if you're ready for some good vibrations like I am, you'll be happy to hear we are taking on one of the most iconic California bands of all time and their cover of Sloop John B. We hope you'll join us. And until next time, look out streets. Here we come. We want to thank you for listening and subscribing to Cover Story. If you have an idea for an episode or something you're dying to share with us, email us at thecoverstorypodcast@gmail.com. Well, I feel so broke.